podcast in the world. From WWE to DNA Impact, by way of the NWA, it's time for Reffin' It Up with legendary referee Brian Heppner and guest host, Mr. Reffin' Rant himself, Jimmy Corderas. An all-new episode starts in... This is Reffin' It Up.
Welcome back to Reffin' It Up. I am RJ. I'm joined by the two greatest professional wrestling referees of all time. First and foremost, Mr. Reffin' Rant himself, Mr. Jimmy Corderas. And last but certainly not least, the sun is out, so the guns have got to be out. Mr. Brian Heppner. Jimmy, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing well, man. It's been a fun week. Lots to talk about. Interesting. So Ref and Rant Nation, what does everyone want to talk about?
Oh, God. There can't be that much to talk about. They gotta want something or somebody, you know.
Yeah, I guess they do.
And by the way, boys, the guns are out, not because it's sunny outside, it's because I'm hot and irritated and yeah.
So well, a little peek behind the curtain before we get to our first count here. I wanted to actually posted something last week. Is my inner Brian Heppner came out on social media this past week when somebody decided to have a certain opinion about a certain the Roman and Rock and Cody fiasco or whatever you want to call it. I'm like, dude, just give it, you know, pump the brakes a little bit, dude. Come on. And then sooner or later, and the SOP boxed me. I'm like, okay, I guess we're not allowed to have our own opinions anymore.
No. Yeah, they can't help it. There are these little nerds, these little geeks that sit at home behind their computers and think that there's some big thing with their words, and they're really not shit. That's the way they get back in life. I mean, that's their way of their claim to fame. I can be a nerd, but you know what? I can talk to you like a real man. Shut the hell up.
Yeah, don't you kind of miss those? As Tony Garea used to say, back in my day, we didn't have social media to worry about and have, you know, everybody's on the internet now. They're reading all this stuff and, who knows what to buy in those, you know, news articles that you read online, what's fact, what's fiction, what's kind of like just out there. And anyways, I'm not saying that they're all bullshit, for lack of a better term, but hey, you know, there is a lot of truth out there in a lot of those articles. They're giving facts, but there's a lot of speculation. Let's say my source said this and this source said that, you know, like, yeah. So now that they read that, they've become enlightened,
right?
Yeah, they're, you know, everyone's an expert now. Instead of, you know, I look at it this way. I listen to other podcasts. You know, I'm a big fan of listening to the Busted Open guys. And for the last 5 days, that's all this situation is all they've been talking about.
Wow.
It has controlled the topic. It has controlled the conversation to the point where there's a lot of other good stuff going on, but nobody's talking about it. They're missing it because everybody's so enthralled with this Cody Rock and Roman thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm into it too. So RJ, why don't you get us up to our first count? Let's get to talking about it.
This is your one count.
As we previously talked about, guys, the scuttlebutt, if you will, is the Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins, at least you can say, current plan for right now for WrestleMania 40. Rock and Roman would be seemingly what it's looking like. Jimmy, I just have a hard time believing it to a certain extent because there's still a lot of time and there's still a lot of, let's say, you know, the best, I forgot who said it, it might have been Bruce Pritchard, but you know what, the worst thing in the wrestling business is the eraser, or I'm paraphrasing, of course.
Right.
No. But Jimmy, it's just, there's so much, cause we got what, 60 some odd days until WrestleMania. So a lot of stuff can change, right?
Yeah, like they always say at the bottom of the lineup, it says card subject to change. And now here's the question, though. I know people are all up in arms because this is the story. The story, Cody has to finish his story against Roman Reigns. But why does, in my opinion, why does it have to be at WrestleMania? WrestleMania is a spectacle. And you talk about, you know, Dusty Rhodes, the working man's wrestler. It wasn't about WrestleMania for him. He was the working man. He did it everywhere, not just on the grandest stage of them all. And, you know, as the story was told by Cody, he got screwed out of that title at Madison Square Garden. And what is Madison Square Garden to the WWE? It's the iconic venue, their home base, Madison Square Garden. That's where they, you know, basically where WrestleMania was born. Mm-hmm. But it's also the same venue where Dusty got, you know, again, screwed out of that title. So why can't the story end there? You know what I mean? There's so many things in play here. Sorry to keep ranting on about this for this period of time, but look at the job Seth has done with that world championship that he's holding right now. He's done a hell of a job over 9 months to get that title over and make it mean something. And, you know, the promo he cut the other week, the working man's title, this is the title you should be going after. He did a hell of a job putting that belt over. And then Cody, with that slight little, you know, you may have something there. Let me think about it. Now, they did the thing on SmackDown where Cody steps aside, and Cody did the unselfish thing because it's all about, you know, he brings The Rock in, who's the biggest star on the planet. And I had somebody tweet me, as like you did, you guys probably did too, who said, yeah, but with Rock, the only people who are fans of The Rock now are guys who are like in their teens and in their 20s who have never seen him wrestle. They're only fans of his because he's a movie star and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? Hey, guess what? Now those guys might tune into WrestleMania to see their favorite star and go, you know what? This wrestling deal isn't a bad thing. And now they become wrestling fans. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
So, first of all, I don't understand why anybody's upset. You're getting two fantastic matches. If these are indeed the way it's laid out, you're getting two fantastic matches. I would buy both nights because of both of those matches being on separate nights. Now, I agree with both of you when you said it doesn't have to be at WrestleMania to finish his story. Okay. But the story was never about Roman Reigns. The story was never about him. The story was about a way of him getting what his dad didn't get and doing it working hard. Now, there are two totally different stories here that people are not even looking at. The first one is, I don't even know what the hell that was. Did y'all see that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't do that. I was party. Sorry, listeners, but balloons just went across my screen.
It's all good.
But the stories, they're two different ones for both of those matches for WrestleMania, if that's indeed the way it goes. There is a family who wants to be head of the table. Is that, that's what that match is all about. It really has nothing to do with the gold. It's about who wants to be head of the table, who thinks they should be head of the table. That's the story. We're done. This is now the other match. You have Cody still trying to close and tell the story. And it just so happens that it's against Seth Rollins. So what? What makes one title better than the other? I don't understand why someone thinks that his story is not done because he didn't go against Roman Reigns. It was never about Roman fucking Reigns. So I don't get it. And I think that WWE is very, very smart by doing it just like this because there's money to be had. Now, somebody tweeted me something really interesting today. I'm not saying I believe it or suggested it would go that way, but it was interesting. He seems to think at this big signing that they have on Thursday in Vegas tomorrow. I believe it's tomorrow, right? Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday.
Yeah. Yep.
That Cody's going to sign the other contract. And basically Roman Reigns is going to have to face both of them separately at WrestleMania.
That's an interesting scenario. It is, and not to cut you off, Brian, but the thing is, it looks like the WWE is hell-bent on this, you know, Roman Reigns breaking Hulk Hogan's streak of the WrestleMania slash modern-day era a title reign, and they can do both. because yes. that's one story to be told. And when Cody ends that streak after Roman beats the Hulk Hogan streak and Cody defeats Roman for that championship, doesn't that mean so much more? And also, doesn't this mean so much more that he defeated someone that even his cousin, The Rock, the greatest superstar on the planet right now, couldn't do?
Right.
It only elevates Cody Rhodes. And you keep making Cody Rhodes the working man's, you know, wrestler. You make him, I hate to steal the line from Bully here, but Bully has been spot on with a lot of what he's been saying lately on Busted Open. You make him that martyr, the one you want to feel for him. You're emotionally invested in him. And Rock at this press conference on Thursday needs to put Cody over to the moon. Look, you know, because Cody in his promo said, I want that title and I'm going to take that title. But not only want that, I want everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, until you guys settle who's the head of the table, right? Here I'm doing my fantasy booker thing and trying to cut a promo, which I can't do. But as fantasy booker, you know what? You guys have to figure out who is the head of the table. And when you guys figure it out, I'm coming for that seat at the head of the table, because it's not only about your family. It's about your family. It's about my family. It's about the family of everybody in that locker room. It's about the family that everybody that buys a ticket to watch us do what we do night in and night out. I want the head of that seat at the head of the table.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, RJ. Go ahead. We've been talking. Go ahead.
It might not, because I might have mentioned this to you guys too, and might have posted it online as well. But my thought process behind this is, what's stopping them from booking Roman, like you said, Jimmy, night one and night two to main event? That's never been done since they've went to the split days. You've never had Roman, let's say Roman and Rock, main event night one to get them there. You're still going to have Cody face Rollins night one if you want. And then night two, you got Cody taking advantage of his Rumble win, taking on the winner. If they want to put the title on the line, or you guys could be ahead of a table match.
Right.
And then you face them at Cody and Roman for the title at night two. That's still possible, but it's just like everybody wants to, you know, you want to feel sorry for him, but at the same time, it's like, all right, well, all these smart fans out here are playing right into their hands, it looks like.
See, the only problem though, RJ, with that to me is it takes the nostalgia away from the Rock, Roman Reigns, face off, all that stuff, because you're going to get so much energy out of that building. And to bring Roman back in that same night against Cody, to me, seems flat. And it seems like that would be the scapegoat that Reigns, Roman would have, would say, look, I wrestled The Rock earlier and I wrestled you and I came up short because of whatever, you know, and that'd be the blame. But I think that you need that nostalgia with The Rock and Roman. I don't understand why people have a problem with it. I really don't. Why? What did Roman? Oh God, I'm getting angry.
No, not you.
So, Jimmy, you answer this. RJ, you answer this. What does Roman have one fucking thing to do with Cody? Just tell me one, other than when he won the Royal Rumble and he pointed at him. Other than that, where's the engagement and where's this disappointment from the fans coming from? Because I don't fucking see it.
It's only from last year's WrestleMania when Roman beat Cody. That is it. And at the end of the Royal Rumble, when he pointed to Roman Reigns in that skybox, people seem to forget that they also showed a shot of Seth Rollins in his skybox with the title sitting beside him, looking like, why is he pointing at him? He had that look on his face. Mm-hmm. Again, why was that shot put in there if this wasn't the plan going forward? And I know a lot of people are saying, well, if you're going to have Roman versus Rock at WrestleMania, why have Cody win the Royal Rumble? Because it adds another wrinkle into the story. It makes another layer. It makes Cody seem unselfish by stepping aside and giving Rock this opportunity. And it could have been, you know, we don't know what Rock whispered in his ear when they, you know, embraced in the ring and they shook hands and stuff like that. And again, The other problem that we're having, I'm having at least anyways right now, is we need to know the reason why he stepped aside. And hopefully we get that at the press conference on Thursday. But I was looking forward to it Monday night. But you know who got benefited the most out of that Seth Cody segment on Monday night? It was Drew McIntyre. Man, mm-hmm. that guy has become a player. I love it because everything he says sounds real. It does. He's not playing wrestler. It feels like real emotion coming out. And there's just another guy you have that could be a top guy.
But Jimmy, is he not even sure to be there at WrestleMania because of his contract?
That's the thing too. If he wasn't, sure to be there, if allegedly he hasn't, renegotiated his contract to sign, why would they put this strap this rocket to his back mm-hmm. and make him the player he is right now? That's the thing that I'm a little bit, is it to entice him to sign? I don't think so. I think, maybe that they do have him locked up. It's just, it's not out there yet. I'm hoping that's the reason why, at least anyway.
Well, so both of you sitting there and everyone that's out there listening, both of you give me your opinions, okay? What is wrong with the way they got it booked if this is the way it's going to end up being? What is wrong with Roman Reigns versus The Rock night two? What is wrong with Cody versus Seth Rollins night one? What is wrong with that? And what is wrong with Cody going over and Roman going over? Now we have another match and more money to make.
And not only that, Brian, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you because if Cody does, so-called quote unquote, I'm doing the air quotes that you can't see right now, finishes the story at WrestleMania, then what? What's next?
Exactly.
Where does that struggle come in? Where does that sympathy come in that you're still feeling for Cody? What if, like you said, at night one, Seth wins the title. Cody wins the title over Seth. Night two, Roman gets by The Rock somehow. He holds up that title. His music's about to hit. Cody's music hits.
Absolutely.
Cody walks out on that stage. He holds his title up, points to it, points to Roman, nods his head and have that handheld camera close enough where he says, I'm coming for you and I'm taking it all.
Yeah. Perfect. And what I'm saying is, what's wrong with that?
Well, but see, the thing is, though, and I've said this before to other people as well, is there's nothing wrong with this in my eyes, because the only reason why there's backlash on it is because of those fickle fans that thought they deserved the Cody versus Roman. They thought they were going to get it. And there's a specific thing there. They thought about it.
I mean, here's the thing though, RJ. I mean, okay. As a fan, I'm sorry. I'm not nothing against the fans, but I'm just saying they can't fucking determine what they want though in stories.
Right.
The story, I didn't want JR shot, but they fucking shot him anyway. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. When your ride's over, exactly. Exit to you.
Yeah.
Okay. But here's the thing. Jimmy, you're spot on. When the story's done, then what? When he gets to the story and it's over, then what? I think WWE's going as long as they can with it. Like, once again, when he finishes the story, I don't know if he's finished or not, but it's not going to be as good as it is now.
No, I hear you. And you're talking to someone here who loves long storytelling. If I can make this comparison, one of the longest movies, which was great for me and, in my day, and back in my day, as Tony Gurria would say, The Godfather. Yeah. And when you saw The Godfather, the opening scene happens in Vito Corleone's office, in The Godfather's office. He's conducting family business in that office. The final scene of The Godfather, 3.5 hours later, is Michael Corleone, the son, conducting that business in that same office that his father did business in. And that's what I see happening here. That's a story to me that makes sense. That's a story to me that gets me enthralled and want to see it happen. And why not do, remember back in the day, Twin Magic?
Absolutely. Happened
on a special edition of the main event. Why not do a special edition of the main event on USA Network? Maybe on NBC? Maybe somewhere, and get the most eyes on it as possible and let Cody be that hero that finally finishes his story there, mm-hmm. and have it done at Madison Square Garden. I'm still stuck on. I love that Madison Square Garden.
Jimmy, I agree with you. I just really the biggest hang up I got, and then I'll be quiet. But the biggest hang up I got is there's bitching for no reason. You're getting two great matches for WrestleMania. If it's not the one you want, then wait for it. Wait for it. And I think that's what WWE's doing. They're waiting to take your more money. They're waiting to take more money, guys. So please keep being angry. That's what they want. They want you to be angry so you'll go back and finally get to see your match and they'll take that money again. Come on. Yeah. Give me a
Like
you guys said, they thought they knew what the outcome was going to be. And because they didn't get what they thought was going to happen, there's your backlash. And yes, I'm a Cody Rhodes fan too. I'm loving what he's doing. That guy's the future. That guy's going to have the company strapped to his back. It just, what is the rush?
Yeah.
This guy's going to be there for years. And he's going to be the man.
Jimmy, before we got on, this will probably be the answer to all of my questions. Because they're so into the internet and reading these dirt sheets, they now think that they know everything. And that's what the dirt sheets were led to believe, which we all were, that it was going to Cody and Roman, but it didn't go that way. So they thought that there were these internet nerds that were great at looking at the future for everybody and telling everybody everything because they thought they knew everything. Smart marks, you know what they are. Jimmy, you've been around them for 100 years. Mm-hmm. Well, they're not smart, so they're pissed. So what? Be pissed. You're going to still get WrestleMania and you're still going to get what you want. So just be patient.
With that being said, guys, strap on your seatbelt because it's going to be one hell of a ride from now until WrestleMania and beyond because everybody's talking the WWE right now. But with that, let's send it up to our Reffin Review for a very special Reffin Review.
This is Reffin Review.
Thirty-six years ago this past Monday, gentlemen, February 5th, 1988, from the Marketplace Arena, Indianapolis, Indiana. I was a mere tot at this time, and Jimmy Corderas was present for this, and obviously Brian has a very distinct memory of it as well, obviously. Guys, we are talking about the 36-year anniversary of Twin Magic at Saturday Night's main event, or the main event that it would later become. But what I want to do to set this up is I have done a little, let's say, video montage. Not really a montage. I found it online. Kayfabe, I guess, but whatever. And I sent this to you guys, of the last 2 minutes or so of this video. So let me go play this real quick, and then we'll talk about it after.
Dave Hebner made his decision. He's standing by it, and we have a new World Wrestling Federation heavyweight champion.
What's going on in the ring? What is going on in the ring? Wait a minute. Is that Dave Hebner? Or is that Dave Hebner?
How can there be two Dave Hebners?
Look at these guys.
Wait a minute.
They look just alike. They look just alike.
The guy on the right's Hebner, isn't it?
The guy on the left is Hebner.
Wait, though. The guy on the right is.
Wait a minute. The Hulkster's coming over to figure out which the official referee assigned was a man by the name of Dave Hebner. I can't believe we're looking at two Dave Hebners. What's going on here?
There's two
Come
Dave
on,
Hebners.
Jesse, what's going on? The Hulkster's trying to find out who the real Dave Hebner is. Dave Hebner, you tell me, Jesse Ventura, and what is going on here?
I think it's the one on the left. I think the Dave Hebner, I don't know who the imposter is. Look at these two.
Well, they're good. Each one.
They look like identical twins.
They're shoving each other. Who moved the right hand? No, I can't believe it.
Well, that shows you who the Dave Hebner is.
Yeah. The one in the ring took the money. It had to be. There has to be some chicanery going on around here. has to be something with a $1 million man. I wonder what they did with the real Dave Hebner to keep him out of the match.
I don't care what, though, but Hogan is not allowed to manhandle referees like this.
I don't believe that man's a legal official. Dave Hebner.
What are you talking about? Official. He just did the match. How could he not be an official?
Hulk Hogan. And I don't know whether that... Oh, wait a minute. Coming back. Oh, look at this. Whoever that man is, he's high above the air. The Hulkster knows. Look out. Oh.
So, gentlemen, you can't... Every time I see this, and I talk to... we talked about this before we hit the record button yesterday. It just is for me, as far as on the fan aspect, even though, yes, I was 4 years old, I still go back and watch it all the time. And it still, to this day, gives me goosebumps. Jimmy, you were there in attendance for this. So, man, what are your thoughts on this? Because obviously this is, for argument purposes, the best storyline of all time.
It was magic. It was absolute magic. I would put it at least in the top three. Let's put it that way. I don't want to say it's number one, but it was, you heard the audience. They were going absolutely apeshit over every little thing, every little movement. And there was really basically in that scene that you showed us, Hulk holding both Hebners, trying to decide which one is the real Dave Hebner, which one is the real Dave Hebner. And me being there in the back, getting to watch it on the monitor. You guys probably know this story that I probably told 100 times, but I was back there watching the monitor. We hadn't seen Dave all day, and we didn't know what the finish was to this match. We only knew that Dave was refereeing the match. So we're watching on the monitor, and I'm watching on the monitor. I say, and I'm thinking to myself, how are they going to get out of this, match? And what are they going to do for a finish and all this sort of stuff? And right there behind me where the monitor was a little catering table where the drinks were and, stuff like that. So I'm pouring myself a quick little coffee while I'm trying to look at the monitor. And as I turn around to stir my coffee, I look back and hiding in the shadows is Dave Hebner, because it was right by Gorilla. And I look and I go, what the hell? And I look back in the ring, because before that I was thinking, hey, Dave looks good. He's lost a little bit of weight. You know what I mean? That's sort of the... And Dave looks at me and he puts his finger up and he goes, shh. And I had that, what is going on here look. And then I thought to myself, oh, this is going to be good, whatever's happening. And then we got Twin Magic. Mm-hmm. And again, like you said, top three storylines, angles ever.
What's crazy about that whole thing is school became very difficult for me to go to after my dad screwed over. I will not lie. And I had no idea how many people in my school watched wrestling at that time and even knew, that my dad was who my dad was. I mean, obviously a lot of people knew, but didn't know to that degree. And boy, did I get berated on that one. I appreciate that, Dad. Appreciate it. But also, Jimmy, do you remember that Earl made that debut in WWE and was didn't come back to that WWE ring for quite a while? Do you remember that?
It wasn't for a while, was it?
Yeah. No, because he tore his shoulder up with being thrown over the ring.
Oh, yeah, because Hulk overthrew him.
Yeah.
They were ready to catch him, and nobody can catch him because he was too high.
Yeah. Yep, and that put him out for a while. I remember, the most interesting thing I thought about this was this. For me as a child, it was my dad calling me that afternoon and telling me to tune into Saturday night's main event. And I'm like, why would you want me to watch Uncle David's product when I'm an NWA hardcore guy? You know what I mean? I'm NWA. I'm Ric Flair, Wahoo McDaniel, Roddy Piper. I mean, Sergeant Slaughter, Don Canoodle. I mean, all these guys. Baron Von Raske, Ivan Sheet, Ivan Koloff, sorry. But anyway, he's telling me to watch the competitors on TV, and I'm like, why? Why would I do that? Well, now we all know. And his debut, he didn't want to tell me. He wanted me to kayfabe. I was a kid. There was no way in the hell he was going to tell me that he was going to be on there. There was no way in hell. He was going to wait till after to talk to me about it. He was not going to take that chance that I was going to keep my young little mouth fucking shut, because it was no way. It was too. too big of a deal. And it was a big deal, and it was awesome. That was really good. Cool to go back on and kind of like reminisce, because it was goosebumpy for me.
Yeah. So if you do want to relive that, I implore everybody that's listening to the show now or in the future, whenever you're listening to this, we appreciate it. But go back to the episode we did with Earl back in November of 2022. Because he goes into great detail, everything from the injuries that himself and Dave, Uncle David, got. Brian mentioned his shoulder. I believe some ribs were shattered, not shattered, but broken or fractured. And I can't help but smile at this, because I can only imagine that this was not the first time that they've gone nose to nose and fought. So
no, not the first time at all. If you would like to hear about a fight or many of them, you can always go back to our JBL episode, and he can tell you about one that even involved knives. So
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Well, it can't get much better than that, guys. I just, like I said, I wanted to reminisce about this, you know, and bring back some good memories of obviously Uncle David and your dad Earl there as well, Brian and Jimmy being there too. It's like, a lot of the stories that both of you guys have, I can never hear enough. It's one of those things where I'm like, wait for this one. And it's just like, and that's, I wanted to say this previous in our first count, but I'll say it now, is Gavin's 11 years old. I have his 11-year-old son, for those of you that don't know. And he's big into wrestling like I was and am, I guess you could say. And I said, he's like, Daddy, wait for this. I said, buddy, just wait for it. Let it play out. Let's see where this goes, because you don't know. It's one of those things of when Undertaker had that Buried Alive match. And oh, the arm comes up. You never know what's going to happen. And like I said, buckle up, guys, because this is going to be one hell of a ride. For the WWE, for the WWE universe, and for wrestling in general, because very rarely do we see headlines from WWE on ESPN, on a lot of these major networks that have no association with the company, and even more so now, at this time that we're in. If you guys don't know, you've been living under a rock, go Google it. We're not going to talk about that here. We've talked about that before, but just buckle up, guys. And I can't wait to see where this goes, but something that, go ahead, Brian.
Real quick, before we move on, I have to do this. That gave me not only goosebumps, but gave me a little bit of sadness. And I want to say, God bless you, David. I love you.
Yes. This is one of my mentors, man.
Well, guys, go check that out over on the Peacock, Saturday night's main event, the main event, what have you. But with that being said, let's take a short break, hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back after this in our second count with our guest this week, former NWA heavyweight champion, Mr. Trevor Murdoch. Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals make eating better every day easy. Wherever tomorrow takes you, be ready with pre-prepared, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved meals delivered right to your door. You'll have over 35 options a week to choose from, including keto, calorie smart, vegan and veggie, and so much more. And there's even more to enjoy with over 55 nutrition-packed add-ons that help you make your weekly meal planning even more delicious. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and have a feel-good week of meals ready to go. The two-minute meals fuel you up fast with Factor's restaurant-quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever you are. They have snacks, smoothies, and so much more. Discover a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and so much more. Sign up and save. Factor has done the math in less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. Flexible for your schedule, get as much or as little as you need by choosing 6 to 18 meals per week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries at any time. No prep, no mess meals. Factor meals are 100% ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. Head over to factormeals.com/refin50 and use the promo code refin50, that's R-A-F-I-N-5-0, to get 50% off. That's promo code refin50 at factormeals.com/refin50 to get 50% off.
This is your two count.
Welcome back to our second count, and we do have now our guest, special guest. He actually Airbnb'd or whatever the fuck you call it with me. We have some close living quarters stories we could probably come up with, but we'll talk about that later on. But former NWA heavyweight champion Trevor Murdoch, welcome to Reffing It Up.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me, man. I'm excited about this. Actually talked to some guys who knows what's going on in the business.
Oh, well, we tend to think we do, and I think between
well, you know what? We were privileged to be under some great learning trees. Not blowing smoke up Brian's, you know what, but you know, his dad and his uncle were so good to me and treated me like mentors, like, and I was privileged to be in locker room with guys like yourself and the talent back in the day. And I said it so many times on this program, like Tony Greer used to say, back in my day, you know, it was just awesome.
Well, you would a little bit under your breath kind of not make fun, but laugh when guys would say that. But we were the young guys then, and now we're the older generation, so we can make comments like that back in the day.
Mm-hmm. So Trevor, let's go back in your career just a little bit real quick. You've done quite a bit. And there's some things I was well aware of, and there are some things that I were very, very unaware of. And we have what we call a dirt sheet, which I'm sure you know a little thing or two about.
Yeah, dirt sheets. They're the best.
They are. I save them all too. And I you know, it's just incredible.
They're all 100% factual as well. I forgot to tell you that as well. Factual
to absolutely. But your career started, you know, pretty early. And where was the point in your career when you were starting out and you figured this wrestling shit, this wrestling world, I really want to do this? Like, and what made you want to do it?
I grew up watching wrestling in St. Louis, watching World Class Championship Wrestling, the Von Erichs, Iceman King Parsons, Gentleman Chris Adams. I was the kid that was sitting and eating a bowl of cereal on Sunday morning, screaming at the TV, just going nuts. And then, of course, back in those days, they had the match that would not have an ending, but you always got the announcer, ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of the television. You know, we'll catch you guys next week. And it drew you back to watching the next episode. So that's what I kind of grew up on. And when I got in the business, it wasn't like it is now. Like, there weren't a plethora of schools, a plethora of wrestlers that were opening up opportunities for other people. So I ended up catching up with a small independent company. My brother was started wrestling for him, and I was doing security. I just happened to be bigger than all the other wrestlers. There's pictures out there of me walking the wrestlers to the ring, and I'm bigger than all of them. It was one of those scenarios where before the shows and after the shows, the guys would put me in the ring and be their tackling dummy. And a wrestler, I'd done that for months, and a wrestler didn't show up at a show, and the promoter was freaking out, going, man, I need to fill this spot. And he looked right at me and he's like, you've been training? And he goes, I'll put you in a match tonight. And they put me under a hood, and you know, I basically got beat up by the top guy. But right, you know, just, you know, I heard the people, even though I was the shit, just being in the ring, you know what I mean? And listening to the people. I did that for about a year and a half before I got a chance to meet Harley Race. And I did a show that he was like partial promoter for. And while I was there, you know, he told me about him opening up a school, and I was a young guy. I was early. I said I was 20 when I went there. And I figured, you know, if I want to be a wrestler, if I really want to be successful, I've got to be trained by somebody that's done it. done everything. And with him opening up the school, I realized, like, man, I'm going to be on like the ground floor of this. This, you know what I mean? I'm going to be his first, one of his first. And that was all in for me. He's like, I'm opening up a school in Springfield, Missouri, and the school transferred to Eldon. And man, I was a certified welder working for the same company that built the arch. I was in a union making $25 an hour in 1999. I was living with my mother in a three-story house, and I had the whole upstairs all to myself. I traded all that in to make $5.75 an hour doing landscaping, to stay in a two-bedroom house with six people, to share the living room floor, and then train. Those first 3 months, we were in a boxing ring because Harley didn't even have a real ring. You know what I mean? It was a concept he was putting together. And when he moved it to Eldon, Missouri, I was selling mobile homes, kind of getting settled into Springfield, and he's abruptly moved it to Eldon, Missouri. So I packed up everything and went to Eldon, Missouri. And it was my life. Like, that was, it wasn't like Trevor's going for to be a welder for and make great money again. It was, I'm finding jobs to supplement my wrestling training because Harley had done everything. So I was going to follow his path. You tell me what to do and I'll do it. And obviously it worked out for me.
That's awesome. That's an awesome story. And the fact that, again, as Brian said, one of the things that I didn't know that it was Harley school that you went to and learned from. And I don't think this younger generation understands the significance of it. Yes, they know the name and they know that he's one of the greatest of all times, but they don't know the intricacies of Harley Race and what he can teach. What was the biggest thing you learned from him going to that school that you still cherish to this day? You know what I mean? Because they say that the business evolves over time, but there's stuff that Harley would teach probably that today you wish that others would do it.
Harley's focus. Yeah. No. Harley's focus was realism, the mentality. Like, for example, if you ever spoke to Harley, he was never a former NWA world champion. He was the NWA world champion. It wasn't, even though he didn't have the belt, he was always the champ. So for him, he wanted you to live and breathe it inside the ring, outside the ring. And when it came to the wrestling, it was all about making them believe it was real. Like, they can go out there and think all they want, Trevor, that wrestling's the big F word. You know what I mean? They think it's a show. But when you step into the ring, those people need to believe that you're out there to hurt somebody. And I found that when I had that mentality, when it came to my wrestling and when it came to how I carried myself out into the ring, that people truly believe it. Like, they are in the moment. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's one of those scenarios where if you don't believe it, they can't believe it. And if you ever watched Harley, like when he walked out to the ring, he wasn't, until he did the King shit, he wasn't all pomp and circumstance. He walked out there. When you watched him come through the curtain, you knew he meant business. He was out there to do his job, and that was to hurt somebody. You know what I mean? And I think that's missing in pro wrestling a little bit. That intimidation factor of, like, Brock is the only one that's ever really been able to bring it back here of late, in my opinion, because, and he's got to just toss guys around like ragdolls to get that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's that real tough guy persona that like, yeah, I know this is wrestling, but I wouldn't want to challenge that guy outside of the building. I think that realism is missing from pro wrestling. That's that aura of, this guy could really fuck me up. You know what I'm saying? That's nowadays when you see a lot of wrestlers, are you guys intimidated by him? When you look at him, when you see how they carry themselves, like, don't get me wrong, I love characters.
Right.
But do any of them really, like, go, man, I don't want to fuck with that guy. I just, you know, I just don't want to fuck with him. Let's just leave that guy alone.
There may be a couple nowadays, but there aren't enough of them. Let's put it that way. Like earlier in the program, we talked about a guy like Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre looks like a guy that can handle himself. And when he cuts a promo, it doesn't sound like, hey, I'm cutting a wrestling promo. It sounds like Drew McIntyre is speaking. And he
very believable.
And he's a real prick. Let's put it that way. Let's be honest. You know, and people are booing him, and that's what it's about.
Well, and that's heat. That's heat, too. That's the other thing. We're missing a real sense of, like, anger and heat from the business. Something that really pisses people off. I think maybe the closest thing we've got now is what the Rock and Cody situation, where people feel like Cody's been fucking hosed, and you got the superstar coming in trying to take the spot. But, like, I think true heat is missing from the business. There's nothing wrong with finding a scenario and having somebody grind on it and have people hate that individual. That used to draw money.
Now, Trevor, I want to ask you a question. This has nothing to do with your career, even though this show's about you. But you mentioned you mentioned something, and I want your opinion on this, okay? Are fans thinking what they're thinking because of the Cody Rhodes things, because of the dirt sheets, and they think they're smart marks? What is your opinion on this? What is your opinion? Just really quickly, you can go through what you think.
Wrestling business is a business. That's where we, like, fans forget about. And, you know, you look at what draws ultimately, and The Rock has got a wider reach. And WrestleMania has, I hate to say it, but it's always, even when we were there, mm-hmm. that was the Mania was, a guy could work his ass off. You had to be almost the guy, like the Roman Reigns spot, the John Cena spot, to really intrude into that space. But it's always been left, WrestleMania has always been left to, like, a guy with notoriety. And The Rock eclipses Cody outside of the wrestling world. In the wrestling world, I believe Cody is the man. Like, he dominates. People want to see him, quote unquote, finish his story. They want to feel, have a feel good moment. And I want that for him. I want him to be able to do that for him. But it seems, you know, the WrestleMania curse comes along. You're just not over enough. And I'm not, and that's so messed up to say about a guy like Cody Rhodes.
So my point, though, okay, and yes, your point's very valid. I want you to just think about this for a second. We talked about this for 30 minutes already before you got on. But why do you feel like the stories about him beating Roman Reigns, the story is two different ones? The story is the head of the table between The Rock and Roman Reigns. That's one story. That's one match. Who's the head of the table? And then you have the secondary story of finishing the story, may not be at WrestleMania, but it's a step to it, where he does and goes after the fighting championship his dad never was able to get at that stage.
As world champion. I to be honest with you, in my opinion, the secondary story is the head of the table for Cody. It's the fact that he wants to be world champion at WrestleMania, to have that that moment where Benoit saying it, that moment where he stands there and all the glitter and everything come mm-hmm. down. You know what I mean? The moment we all, like, every wrestler dreams of being at WrestleMania, winning the world title, standing tall, the end of the night, being that moment. And I think ultimately that's the story for Cody Rhodes. And whoever not the head of the table, not Roman Reigns. I just think Roman, no offense, I think Roman's a side piece on this one, in that story.
Well, and here's another thing. And guys, I'm sorry.
No,
RJ,
cool.
You could go next, RJ, because I know this is not what we're supposed to be talking about, but he talked about mm-hmm. it, so I'm sorry.
No, and I love his take. It's it makes sense.
Well, think about this. All right, think about this. If the story was to be Roman Reigns, WWE is hell-bent on him winning that belt for that certain period of time. Whatever you said, Jimmy, was called the
longest reign in the modern, or the WrestleMania
he's wanting to clinch with era. Bruno, like Bruno and Hogan, mm-hmm. like they're wanting him to take the top spot, right?
So to me, it's like, we're going to avoid him losing to Roman Reigns and really let the WWE nation down. Let's move him over here, get some satisfaction for you smart fucks that think they know everything, and we keep Roman Reigns intact and then set it up for later to make more money.
Yeah, but it's almost like that. It's almost, and let me put this in, like, I don't know how dirty I can get on here. It's almost like jerking off and expecting, like, oh, like you missed something. Like, you feel like you really missed out on a moment. You got it, yeah, you got laid, but like, you know, you guys understand what I'm saying. I'm weird about it. I feel like you're really missing out on an opportunity to kind of capitalize on a moment. And WWE has missed out on so many of those moments. Even us as fans, we've been like, you know, you should have made the right choice here. And they didn't. So it just feels like this is another, a semi swing and a miss. You know what I'm saying?
I do. Okay. And now I understand it a little bit better on a fan's perspective now, because you put it into sexual innuendo. And
it's just, you know, like, it's just nothing before you get laid. Like, okay, yeah, we got to the, you got to the finish line, but did you really, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's Cody deserves it.
Oh, Trevor, I totally get you. I've had a lot of misses myself. So,
you know, and
coming from a guy with three kids.
Well, those were accidents. No, I'm kidding.
Now let's get back. Let's get back to Trevor's world again. Now, I have a question for you, Trevor, because like you said, you were trained by Harley Race, one of the toughest men of all time. And again, you hate the F word being used. You want to make it look as real as possible. You want to make it look like a fight and somebody's trying to win and someone's trying to beat someone else. Now, going from the world you were before entering the world of WWE, where, here's another term that fans hate, sports entertainment. What was the biggest adjustment you had to make going from that world to where characters and persona kind of superseded that mentality, so to speak?
No, you're 100%. It was a complete culture shock, because, gentlemen, I'm one of the few guys that went straight from the independents to WWE. I never spent one day in developmental. I couldn't even have told you what the parking lot looked like. So I was literally kind of thrown into the WWE system with no knowledge of what was going on. Thankfully, my tag partner, Lance Cade, knew how green I was in that aspect and kind of gave me the heads up on the fact, like, you know, Trevor, I understand you're a wrestler. I've seen your stuff, but like, we've got to do character. You've got to add some character into that. You can be aggressive and rough. And that's when I started doing the whole boo-boo face, like the whole, the sourpuss face. I'm standing next to this guy. I'm like, okay, I got to do a character. And he's like the best version of me. I'm talking Lance Cade. You guys know him and met him. He was 6'7", jacked to the gills, moved like a cruiserweight, sweetheart of a guy. Look, you know, he's a good looking guy. And then I'm standing next to him going, ah, fuck. Like, what am I going to, how do I, like, ah, son of a bitch. I'm not going to be prettier than this guy. So let's just go the opposite route. Let's just try to be the ugliest, the meanest looking. Let's go just everything what everybody else was. Everybody was trying to be a cool heel. You know, you guys know what I'm saying? That stone cold heel.
Yeah.
I wanted to be the old school, like, angry heel that was always pissed off. And so that made things easy for me. Once I realized that's my lane and I can be angry all the time, it made it very easy to transition into the WWE style and tell, you know, you just had to hit your high points. You know what I mean? And not to mention, you're surrounded by so many talented guys. Like, that was the one thing that was really important to me, was I was at the monitors. And then for the high profile matches, I was at the curtain. I wanted to see it live and see how the people were reacting to what and how the cameras were moving around. And that was the other thing. Like, I had no idea on, you know, cameras, following which camera, where to go. And with WWE, you just got to find a camera. You know what I mean? And make sure your back's not to the hard camera as well, obviously. But
Real quick, did you say you were watching the product and watching the monitor and watching through the curtain?
All the time. I was low man on totem pole, man. And like, I came into the company and became world tag team champion 6 weeks in, which was awesome and great, but all in the same sense, I didn't feel like I deserved to be there. I got my chance, but like, I didn't know the product. I knew guy, like, it, when I, we became champ, it really pissed off Rosie and Hurricane, more Hurricane, because those guys have been working hard and we kind of came in and they just took the belts out from under them, which didn't garner me any friends with those two. It was So I constantly was watching everybody's stuff because no one was telling me a direction. So I had to be prepared for whoever I was wrestling. So I wanted to know their shit so they were confident, you know, to work with me, and then confident to use my ideas as well too.
Well, the reason why I brought the monitor thing up is because how ingenious are you? Do people still even do that shit anymore?
There's a few, you know what I mean? And that's, I don't know how wrestlers cannot not think that way, because eventually you're going to wrestle these guys. So to be a professional, you need to, at the very least, know some of their shit. So you can come to that guy and make him feel, it's just, I don't know, I guess it's wrestling 101. Like, I want my opponent to feel comfortable and that I'm knowledgeable and I'm a professional. So when I come to him, I'm going to go, hey, can we do this? I seen you do this, and this is amazing shit, bro. Can we please get this in? And that usually makes my opponent feel very comfortable about what I want to do. And in turn, that's how we tell our story.
Yeah, and we had not to go off into this direction. We had the pleasure of having Chavo Guerrero on last week, and he mentioned something along those same lines. One of the things nowadays is, unfortunately for a company like AEW, who is growing, we want to see them do well, but they weren't on the road every day, 5 days, 6 days a week, every week, getting to work in front of live crowds, getting to try things out in front of them, see what gets a reaction, see what doesn't get a reaction. Getting to work with people in front of an audience and learn. And you, like you said, back in that era, there were so many guys to learn from and get that knowledge.
Oh, Chavo was one of the guys when WWE decided to randomly split Lance and I up. Chavo was one of the guys that they paired me with initially. And thank God, because I went to him and I just like, Chavo, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm still kind of trying to figure things out, and now they've split Lance and I up, and he's like, I got you, just follow my lead. And every night after every match, he was like, you know, you did this great, you did that great, but you fucking stiffed me on this. You didn't think about, you know, like Chavo wasn't easy on me, but he wasn't like the guy that was always riding my ass. He would always tell me, like, kid, you did this great, you did that great, you were thinking, you know, this way, but you need to fix this stuff. And that's the kind of stuff I wanted. Like, I'm a thick-skinned individual. I learned very early on that I've never gotten better with somebody patting me on the back saying, Trevor, Jesus Christ, you're great. That was amazing shit. I've always gotten better when someone's come up to me and said, Trevor, I love you and all, but that looked like shit, or you need to work on this. Because I'm not all – I want to be the best, but I'm striving to be the best every time I go out there. So there are going to be things that I'm either going to mess up on or not think about. And my ego is not so big that I won't listen to guys that have been somewhere and listen to their advice and try to get better. Like, that's just, if you're not trying to get better in this business, you might as well give it up, man, because you're always learning and you see something that could do better.
Sorry to step on your toes again, RJ, but
because,
you know, Trevor, you said something magical there. Never stop learning in this business. And I think that's what I'm not around it like I was back in the day, but it almost feels like the younger talent starts to get in that zone where they think they know it all. And you've got so many minds backstage that you could pick. Like you said, you had someone to guide you and tell you. And even I would say, ask someone from a refereeing standpoint, I would ask David Earl. I said, did you watch the match? What did I do right? What could I have improved on? And stuff like that. And they would say, why did you do this? And I'd think about it, and then they'd explain it to me. And that's, you're always learning.
Well, and that's, again, gentlemen, like, I know the business changes, but the base model of pro wrestling and the fact of, like, the older generation teaches the next generation and teaches the next generation, it has proven to work. I think the issue that we've come across, though, is there's like a huge generation gap between who's out there when it comes to veteran status to guys that are out there wrestling to, I wouldn't call them green, but just haven't had a lot of TV experience. There's a huge gap there. And I think that's one of the things wrestling is missing, is that guy in the locker room, that journeyman that's in the locker room that works with a guy that teaches him hey, listen, you know, you did again, the Chavo Guerrero, because that's what Chavo was doing with me. You know what I mean? He was just grooming me to be a better televised wrestler. And we're missing that in pro wrestling. There's a huge gap there, gentlemen.
The chemistry, because I go back, watch a lot of your earlier stuff there, Trevor, with Lance, and the chemistry that you guys had, that 2005-04 era right there, tag team champions, you don't see that a lot, of that tag team chemistry, that tag team psychology. That was 2005. We're coming up, you know, we just started 2024.
Right.
What is something 2024 Trevor Murdoch would tell 2005 Trevor Murdoch?
Ooh, shit. That's a good question, man. Wow, that's a big one. I think if you're talking about Trevor that was in WWE, I think I'd have played the game a little better. When I was young back then, I was a bit stubborn. I was told, you know, the cream will rise to the top in WWE, Trevor. And I thought my wrestling ability would get me to where I wanted to in WWE. Whereas I didn't feed into a lot of the drama and the bullshit. Lance and I really kept to ourselves when it came to the guys. Like, we didn't, when Lance and I would go out and party and stuff, it wasn't with the boys, because we always heard about the boys getting in trouble. They always stooge on, like somebody would stooge each other out. We're like, well, shit, if we want to go have a good time, I don't know what's stooging on us. So we didn't friendly buddy up to the, you guys, and I'm not going to say any names, but you guys know the workers on the card that you could have been friends with, that could have helped you get a little higher on the card and could have helped your career. Whereas a lot of other guys were kissing their ass, Lance and I were just like, hey, listen, we know we're good, and as long as you keep watching, we'll show you. We did play the game, you know what I mean? And I wish I should have played the game a little bit longer. You know, that would have obviously helped, you know, longevity when it comes to finances. But other than that, you know, I probably would have told Trevor to work out a little more, hit the gym. Wouldn't hurt a fat guy to get an ab or two. Like, well, but other than that, I'd still be the same guy. Like, I think wrestling is all about telling stories, and that's what we should focus on. A lot of companies don't do that. They shotgun shit a lot to try to get ratings, and nothing beats a story about somebody hating a heel and loving a baby face. It always draws money every single time.
Well, Lance, we're going to jump into our third count.
Nope.
What's that?
Nope.
No?
You call them Lance. You call them Lance.
Oh, because I read Lance. I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's why I get it all the time, homie. I mean, I don't look like him. I wish I did. Shit, I made a whole lot more money.
Well, I guess we need to go ahead and edit that. Sorry about that, because I had a question.
No, you're good. I don't care. I love this. I just love pointing out the obvious to you, Brian. Because it's kind of a dick move, though.
I'm not going to say it. It's kind of a dick move, though. Like, hey, bro. Like, you called him Lance. Like, could have, like, texted him or something privately? Or nah, I'm just busting balls.
All right. Well, that's it tonight, folks. I'll see you next week.
No, but I love, really quickly too, I love what you said about it being about wrestling and telling stories. And I have to fit this in at least once a podcast. It's not about hitting a twisting, burning 450 hammer Phoenix splash just to do it.
100%. I would love to see that shit if it made sense. Like, don't get up and run half. You don't do that in the middle of the match and then run three. You know what I mean? The rest of the match, like. I want to see those amazing moves. I truly do. And I think wrestling has a place for them. We just need to put them in the right places. That's all. You know what I mean? Let them mean something again. There's a reason why a lot of our young wrestlers nowadays are starting to get hurt early on in their careers, like doing shit that they shouldn't be doing in front of a TV crowd that it didn't really draw fuck all. Like, I don't mind the crazy shit, but let it mean something. Do it at a pay-per-view. Let it be where it, finishing up an angle, but don't just do it on a Wednesday night because you're trying to get the boss's attention.
Right. I agree. So let me try this again, Trevor. And you know,
yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And you know, that's my son's name, correct?
Oh, it's a beautiful name, but I did not know that. But he already sounds like a fine young man.
He is. He's a fine specimen. He's a big boy like you.
Good deal. Good deal.
Not as big as your boy, but he's a big boy. But before we move on to our third count, I just wanted to ask you really quick. I don't want to bring you down. This is hopefully to bring you up. I know from being in an Airbnb with you back in our NWA days when I was there, we sat around the coffee table. Doesn't matter what we were doing. It's nobody else's business. But we talked in length about Lance. And that's why I called you Lance a little while ago, because I had it on my mind. But anyway, I'm sorry. Well, do you just mention anything that you want to say about him? I mean, I don't want to – there's things I'm hoping you'll hit, but I don't want to do that because it's not fair. I want
you – No, I'm open. I'm open. You ask me whatever you want, man, because it's something I lived through. My biggest fear is for people to think Lance was only his end. You know what I mean? Like that, yeah. That he – Lance, we're talking about a guy from Nebraska who did nothing but pro wrestling his whole life. Like, it wasn't like he had, like, when he was 16, had a side job. No, he was a great basketball player all through high school, wanted to be a pro wrestler, got done with high school, and went to Shawn Michaels Wrestling Academy. From there, he went to, what was the territory with Les Thatcher?
That was the Midwest. That's right.
Yeah, he went to Les Thatcher's territory. Then he went to Memphis, I think, for a minute. And then went to OVW and then got brought up to the roster. So we're talking about a guy who's never had a real job his whole life. He loves wrestling, and that's all he's ever wanted to be. Now, he got into the business, did great, became a – obviously, you guys remember how well he looked. The guy worked his ass off, was a huge – looked amazing. Moved to like a cruiserweight, but just like in any other sport, he got hurt and he got injured, and he was trying to recover from an injury. And just like any other doctor back in that time, the first thing they prescribed him was painkillers. Mm-hmm. And you guys know that back then, like, it wasn't hard to get. Like, it literally, you could walk into a room with a Tylenol bottle and go, and every head would turn, because somebody would be like, "Hey, what do you got there, big guy?" You know, "Yeah, Brian, you're laughing because you've seen it, man.
I've done it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. when I met up with him, he was coming back from an injury, and he was still dealing. You know, it was one of those scenarios where. Come back sooner than probably what he should have, because you guys know as well as I do, back then when you lost the spot, they had somebody to replace you immediately. Like, there wasn't like, "Hey, you're so over, we're gonna hold, you know, when you come back we're gonna kick you off at the same spot you were in." If you got injured and you weren't a top guy, you virtually had to restart. So he came back a little sooner than he probably should have, and I ended up getting injured. He wasn't the only one that was a part of this. I'm not going to sit here and say like he was all by himself. I ended up getting my knee hurt. And there was a point where we were, we had somebody, deliver, FedEx packages show up more often than what they should. You know, I'm not going to go into detail, but you guys know, like, it back then, it wasn't hard to get gimmicks. And so when you're on the road, like we were, Lance and I weren't on TV, we were on house shows. So we were gone 5 days a week. And that didn't include whatever promotional shit we'd have to do on whatever day, so we did what we had to do to keep the grind going, because we didn't want to lose a spot. And you guys know how quickly life turns in the WWE bubble. Like, you don't really realize, like, "Wow, I've already been here 3 years. Like, holy shit. Like, yeah. where did it all go?" And when you mix drugs, alcohol, whatever into that, it goes even faster. So I ended up getting let go. 4 years later, ended up getting let go, and Lance had gotten injured, and he took a Soma on a red-eye flight out of Vegas. You guys remember those shows? You get done with the show, feet as quickly as you could to the airport. Lillian Garcia happened to be on that flight. Lance took some Somas thinking, hey, listen, I'm going to go to sleep. I'm going to wake up. We'll be home. You guys know the drill. You guys know the gimmick, you know? Well, he started drooling, and Lillian seen it and went nuts. He's having a seizure, and the plane's starting to back out from the airport while this is going on. And they stop the plane and pull him in to the airport, and they put him on a gurney. And I get a call early that morning about 9 o'clock from Lance. And he had told me that he had told me the scenario, woke up in the hospital. And I asked him, I said, did they draw any blood? And he had looked at his arm and said, yeah. I said, all right, bud. I was like, you know what's next. You know, he's like, I know. And sure enough, an hour later, he called me and said they had let him go. He was upset about that, but also, like, we were both excited. Like, okay, let's go out and do what we had talked about doing before. We hit Japan. We hit Mexico. We were doing independence in California. But his ultimate goal was to go back to WWE, which I totally understood that. Like he, that's where he wanted to be at. So he got himself straightened up and straightened out and got his job back with WWE. But you guys know, like, when you get around certain people, old habits, you know, people tend to, it's easy when people want friends, you know what I mean? You know, so old habits fell into old habits. But he realized this time, I have a problem. I have an issue. So he went to Johnny A's, and as of today, like, he's the only main roster guy that had went to the company and admitted that he had a problem while he was on, like, legitimately on the roster. Like, he was on the Raw roster. They patted him on the back. They said, man, good job. We understand. We appreciate it. They sent him to rehab. I didn't get a chance to talk to him for the first 2 weeks. He had, you know, like, no contact for the first 2 weeks. Third week, he called me. And, man, he sounded clear. I mean, it's the clearest I've ever heard him sound. Happy, looking forward to a life without any restriction, you know, you guys know what I mean. Like anything bringing you down. He got out. WWE had promised him before he went in that it wouldn't affect his career at all. They were super proud of the decision that he had made. 2 weeks after he got out, WWE let him go. So we're talking about a guy who's been let go from the company twice over drug issues, and you know how well, you know, WWE loves that. So it put him in a spot, you know what I mean? He was slightly depressed, you know, but he was making the best of it. He went to Japan, and when he went to Japan, he got hooked up with somebody who was, and I'm not going to name any names because I'll fucking bury him, and probably if I ever meet him face to face, I'll fucking bury him in the instead of go to an alcoholic and offer him a beer. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
And if you're a real friend, you certainly don't do that. And when he went to Japan, this guy was looking for somebody to drop with instead of looking out for a real brother. And loaded him up and got him back on to what he was doing full time. And when he went home, his, you know, when you get like a pill addiction, what people don't understand about pill addiction, it isn't something like that just happens. Like, it's a gradual, people don't take 10 and 15 and 20 pills at a time just outright. It's a gradual process. Your body has to build up a certain amount of tolerance. And most people that are addicted to painkillers, like I was, you know, I was at a point where I was taking 5 to 6 drops of 10 milligram Vicodins a day. So that's 25, 30 pills sometimes a day. That's how I started. It's just how it ended up. My body built up that tolerance. So when Lance went back home, his body had been clean, you know, had been fresh, been without the gimmicks, you know what I mean? And he didn't realize. He thought taking the same amount as he took before would get him to where he, you know, where he wanted to be, and it slowed his heart down till it stopped. His dad was coming to take him to the airport for a trip to Japan, and I can't imagine, because his dad was like 150 pounds soaking wet. I can't imagine like what his dad had to deal with coming home, because he couldn't roll him over to give him CPR, because Lance was such a big guy. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, me telling the story, it's going to get out, it's going to hit socials, and I hope people don't, like, I hope people don't think bad about Lance. He is not defined by one moment, and certainly a moment that he wasn't expecting to happen. He was just fighting a demon that we all fight. It just happened to be, he happened to be in front of a camera, you know what I mean, in the public life for people to know, you know what I'm saying? So I've had people tell me, Tyrus, you guys all know Tyrus. I do his mm-hmm. podcast every week, Tyrus and the Wise Men. And he's like, you need to write a book about that moment. And I'm just so scared that people will think badly of Lance or look at Lance any other way except the fact that he was an amazing father, loved pro wrestling, loved life. Like, he was funny. He was like me. Like, he thought wrestling should be a certain way. You know what I mean? And he carried his matches in that fashion. I remember, quick story. Remember, like, before the shows, the guys used to, Arn would come to the building before the shows at the house shows, and you could get in the ring and work with Arn, and he would help you learn something. You know what I mean? So Lance and I we realized, and this is really early on, but Lance and I realized Arn's getting to the building early, so we want to get there. We want a little bit of Four Horsemen with you, gentlemen. Like, we've got the Bible right here. Why are we not asking him every question in the book? So we get there, and we're working on hip tosses. And, you know, Arn, oh, God damn it. If I see another motherfucker get hip tossed out of a goddamn abdominal stretch, I'm going to fucking shoot myself. And I said, Arn, everybody does that. He goes, Trevor, let me put you in a goddamn abdominal stretch. And I said, okay. And he just stretched the shit out of me. Like, he goes, all right, now fucking try to hip toss me out of this. And I obviously couldn't. And he goes, now, it makes no goddamn sense now, doesn't it? I said, no sir, it doesn't make any sense at all. Well, that evening we're wrestling Rosie and Hurricane, and you guys know, you work on stuff and it just pops into your match. Like, I was working mm-hmm. on it earlier in the day, so I sure enough, I step in, I grab Hurricane, and I put in an abdominal stretch. Now, you guys know, like, I am quite a bit bigger than Hurricane, just mm-hmm. tall, thicker. You know, so I've got him in this abdominal stretch. I've only been with the company maybe 3 months, 4 months. And he's like, I'm going to hip toss you. And I go, no. Because I'm going to hip toss you. And I go, no, I'm going to fucking hip toss you. And I just threw him down and I booted him in the head and went on about the match and fucking finished up the match. And we get in the back. And as we come back, Hurricane comes through the curtain and he is pissed off. Who the fuck are you to tell me no? I'm the fucking veteran in the goddamn ring. I tell you, I'm going to fucking hip toss you out of abdominal stretch. You fucking listen to me. And this is where I got to give Lance props. I'm still kind of green. I'm like, oh, goddamn. Like, he's yelling at me in front of all the boys. Like, this isn't like he pulled me off into the shower and had like a teachable moment where I could express myself. Like, Arn just told me not to do that. I ain't trying to piss him off. I'd rather piss you off. No, he's doing this in front of all the boys. And Lance comes through the door and he's like, motherfucker, we're the goddamn heels. We lead this motherfucker. You're a $1.50 soaking wet. I will fucking eat you for lunch. Don't you fucking talk to my partner like that. And really stood up for me in front of all the boys. And like, I was like, right on. Like, he didn't need to do that, but he was setting the precedence. Like, this is my fucking partner. He was doing what he was told. Back the fuck off of him. And, like, I'll always remember that moment. Like, he didn't, like, you know, he could have just shut his mouth, let me take my ass chewing and like, not cause any trouble. But he put himself in the line of fire for criticism. And you guys know back then, criticism could turn into a big problem if it was told to the right person.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right, well, Trevor, I'm glad. This was a good little conversation. I loved it. And I appreciate you breaking it down for us and all that kind of stuff. So what we're going to do now is we're going to move on to our third count. And when our third count, which I know you listen every week, you probably know exactly what's happened.
100%.
Okay. So what we're going to do is go to our third count. We're going to have some fan questions, some Jimmy Corderas questions, some RJ questions, some Brian Hember questions. Plug your social medias and get you out of here. We'll be back with our third count with Trevor Murdoch when we come back. Bye.
This is your three count.
We are back with our third count with our very special guest, Mr. Trevor Murdoch. We got a listener question here from our good buddy, Marcus. He wanted to get your opinion on the comparisons between yourself and Captain Redneck, Dick Murdoch. And do you currently, or did you previous embrace it or try to avoid it?
The Murdoch gimmick came from when I went to WWE. At the time, I was doing Trevor Rhodes, the son of Dusty, the bastard child of Dusty Rhodes, even with his permission. That's a whole nother story. Harley called him up one time and asked him. But when I got to WWE, Dusty had a lot of heat with Vince. And when I went to do my tryout, I had just gotten back from the dojo in Japan, 6 months of doing 500 squats a day, 300 push-ups a day, 5 minute net bridges. I had planned on spending my career in Japan, but I'd gotten to know Ricky Steamboat, who was an agent there at the time. And he's like, Trevor, he goes, you know, you're up here for a tryout. He goes, Dusty's got a lot of heat. You look more like Dickie Murdoch than you do Dusty Rhodes. I was like, I don't give a shit what the fuck you call me. You put me in a fucking big tutu. That's what they want. Just give me an opportunity. And I had watched so much of Dick's stuff that it was just easy for me to incorporate a few of his mannerisms. I used to do the 3-point pivot where the face plant, where Dickie would be getting his ass beat and he would start getting punched in the face, and out of nowhere his legs would start getting wider and wider and wider, and then on the big punch the guy would fall on his face, ass up in the air. I would do that shit at house shows and people would pop for it. I did it at TV. I got my ass chewed about it. That's stupid. What are you doing, Trevor? Even though everybody in the house reacted, and everybody on TV, when I talked to him, reacted, they didn't really like it. So I stuck to the more serious side of Dickie, which if you talk to any of the old school vets, said that he could have been the NWA world champion if he had just been more serious.
Awesome. I have it sounds like a simple question, but it's one that I just wanted to ask because you talked about Harley Race. He isn't a former NWA world champion. He is the NWA world champion. Still to this, you know, they would be considered that. God bless him. You know, you winning that, basically that same title that Harley wore, what was the feeling like? How did you embrace that, you know, emotionally?
We were discussing the Cody finisher story kind of saga earlier, and that to me was kind of like the finish of the story. WWE didn't take me serious as a world champion, but when I got to NWA, I fit like Cinderella's shoe, bro. Like I fit NWA style, I fit their look. With me being trained by Harley, and with Billy Corgan running NWA, he's a very sink or swim kind of individual. He gives guys opportunities, but if you shit out, like you shit out, like, sorry, like move, let's move on to the next guy. And he gave me an opportunity. Things kept going, getting bigger and better for me. It accumulated wrestling Nick Aldis at the Chase, the first wrestling main event in 37 years at the Chase in St. Louis. Winning it in front of my family, my friends. The only thing that would have made it more perfect was if Harley would have been there so that I could have shown him, like, Harley, like, I mean, it was your first student, and I finally made it. Like, to me, that's what made it from that. I made it once I became NWA World Champion. Now, don't get me wrong. I had Ric Flair come out and hand me the NWA World title, which was an amazing moment and extremely thankful for him. But it certainly doesn't undermine anything that I did that night. But that was, to me, that's where I felt like all my hard work, my 25 years of hard work had finally paid off at that moment. Was I can finally say, like, I did something that Harley did. And no one else at Harley's group, none of Harley's guys can ever say that. I'm the only one. You know what I mean? And that, yeah. Not to mention being, when you're the champ, you're the leader of the whole show. So it was, I was excited to finally be like, okay, like I lead the mentality of what this program is. I lead what the structure and what the people think of this program. And they gave me an opportunity and two times, and I'm very thankful for it.
So Trevor, I wanted to say too, you have gone through many trials and tribulations, and I think at some point, and this was a conversation me and you had again when we were bunking up together as buds in the NWA and things like that. Who was it? It was me, you, Fritz.
And there was, see here, what was this? Couple photo guys. Shit, man, that was a long time ago. That was Georgia, right? That was Georgia.
Yeah,
Tim Storm was with us. Who else? I remember all of us sitting in the living room talking about getting food because there wasn't nothing open.
Well, anyway, long story short, I remember, you know, you saying something to the effect that the NWA resurrected your career and your love for wrestling.
100%.
And I just want to know how it feels to you to know that you've grown with them. I was there, but I wasn't there growing like you at this point. Okay.
Right.
And there are many names that I want to mention right now. Okay. And I want you to just think about this because it's made me think about it. I'm going to name names real quick. Ricky Starks, Thunder Rosa, Eli Drake, who is now LA Knight, Caleb Conley, Dick Aldis, Tyrus, The Rock and Roll Express, Ziggy Dice, Dem Boys, Scott Steiner are just a short list of people that you have worked with while I was there. And if you think about the names I just said and where they're at now, wow.
It certainly makes me feel like I made the right decision, because you're right. Like when the NWA came into my life, it was literally at Harley's funeral. And I kind of felt like that was full circle. With Harley passing away, it was time for me to move on into another direction. And NWA, you know, they were at the funeral. Nick Aldis, Dave Lagana were there, and they invited me to come do a show. And they actually, you know, kind of bullshitted me. They talked to me into being a producer. But I'm a wrestler. Every wrestling show I go to, I bring my gear. And that was the first thing Dave Lagana asked me, was like, hey, you got your gear? And I was like, yeah. He goes, all right, you're wrestling Ricky Starks tonight. And when I got done, I got in the back, and those guys were like, we already have you booked for a match tomorrow. One of the things that made me fall in love with it again was that somebody trusted me. Somebody listened to me. And I'm not saying, now when I say listen, I mean, they heard me. Not me telling them what I need to do or what needs to happen or if I'm trying. No, they heard what I can do. And all I asked for was opportunities. For example, I think you were there for this match, Brian. I wrestled Tom Latimer. It was my third time I'd wrestled Tom, and I'd went over. This would be my third time going over on Tom Latimer. And I was like, man, I don't know what to do differently to give a different reaction from the people. And Tom's a fantastic athlete. He's an amazing wrestler. I came up with the idea of not getting one offensive move in the whole match. And I went to Tom with the idea, and Tom was like, yeah, like, cause Tom gets it. Tom knows pro wrestling. I went to Billy with that same idea, and I painted this picture that I was not going to get one offensive move. Literally the first moment my second foot touches the mat, Tom is going to be whipping my ass. And Billy goes, I don't know. And I go, please trust me. And he goes, okay, all right. And I went out there, and Tom proceeded to kick my ass for 5.5 minutes, shot me in the corner out of nowhere. I sidestep, he eats the buckle. I roll him up, pull up the trunks, 1, 2, 3, roll to the floor, look to the camera. Oh my God, did I just win? The whole crowd's going nuts. And I hadn't done one offensive move. And it made me feel so good that Tom got over. He didn't lose anything. The crowd went nuts. We got the reaction we were looking for, and we did something different. And he trusted me, and I gave him the reactions that he was looking for. And once that trust, that door was open, he let me go, all right, Trevor, what do you got? You know what I mean? And that, when you open up to me like that, when you say, okay, I trust you, I'm going to give you a chance, I give you my undying loyalty. That's all I've ever wanted. Give me an opportunity to fail. And by NWA giving me that opportunity, it made me fall in love with the business all over again.
And you love that story. Sorry, Brian. I don't mean to cut on you. No, it's just that I love that story. And, you know, I talk a lot about today's wrestling, people using the roll-up for a finish too much nowadays after seeing all, like I said earlier, the twisting, burning 450 hammer Phoenix splash, and then you do a roll-up for a finish so much later where it doesn't make sense. There in that, you know, in that situation, it made sense.
100%. And we got the reactions we were looking for. Again, nobody lost anything. It was just a simple, basic story of I pulled one out on a guy. And, man, I think sometimes we forget that this is pro wrestling and that shit can happen. Guys can get accidentally knocked out. You know what I mean? They only know the story that we paint for them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. We have a question here from Ryan. He wants to know, what was it like to work with such big names in the WWE, big in name and in stature, like Umaga, Triple H, and even The Undertaker?
That's just a learning tree situation. Like, I mean, anybody asks that, it's kind of a basic question. But like, you know, that's a learning tree situation. You just sit back and you shut your mouth and go, okay, I'm going to do this. I will tell one story. We got a chance to wrestle. We had a little 6-week run with DX when they first came back, right before they started wrestling Edge and Randy. And because Sean was trained Lance, we kind of got the rub on that. So we got to run 6 weeks of house shows, which was a fantastic learning experience. But you guys know as well as I do, like, those guys like to have fun in the ring. So before we go out there, they look at us and go, we're going to call it. And Lance and I, we're gung-ho. We're like, fuck yeah, let's go do this shit. Come on, let's go. We go in the ring and we start doing our gimmick. DX comes out, of course. They pop, plays. Well, as we go to come to face-to-face, Hunter starts telling Lance what he wants to do. And Lance looks over at him and goes, we're the fucking heels. We're going to call this fucking match. And I give those guys 100% credit. Sean walked away and goes, oh, this is going to be great. They listened to every word that we said in there virtually, like virtually everything we called in there. Because also, we knew their guys' as shit. Like, we had been wrestling those guys so much. We've been watching them for so long. That we knew their shit, and we went out there and just worked and had a good time. And if you can't get over wrestling DX, like, you need to just get out of the business.
Right.
No kidding. I know what you're saying. It definitely wasn't that public enemy APA situation. That's for sure.
No. It's like wrestling the Hardys, man. How can you have a bad match with those guys? They're so over.
Mm-hmm.
So, Trevor, touching on that, but can you explain to me, I know the answer, by the way, so this is not a trick question. Why is it that the heels call the spots and run the match? Why is it that? And now I've been told by two people that are higher up than probably me and you will ever, ever, ever be in our lives. And what is going on?
This is a birthday. I forgot.
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
What's going on right now? But Brian has balloons going across his screen.
I had it earlier too. I don't know what's going on. Am I hallucinating right now?
I don't know. What I was always
told. I was always told that the heels were number one. Were usually the veterans in the ring. Number two, those guys were the ones that were getting like. They're the ones that led the pace and the story of getting their ass kicked. Most of the time, the heels lose. Number one. Number two, like, Harley always told me, like, when it came to the belts and stuff, like, it's a heel champion is always better when it comes to the draw of the business because people do not want to see a guy, a babyface, defend the belt. They want to see a babyface win the belt. So I was always told like the heels were like the guy, like those were the guys that, that led the show in the ring. I wanted to be the heel because I always wanted to, I knew the story I wanted to tell and how to get my ass kicked. So it was just always easier from a heel's perspective. Is that the answer you were looking for? Or am I, did I not go into detail?
No, no, you're fine. It's very similar. I don't like not like dropping names, but Fit Finley.
Oh yeah, Fit Finley's shit. Yeah, drop that all day.
I mean, he had told me that basically heels are better at A, being the veteran, if you are that. B, you can feel the interaction of the crowd better than the babyface because the baby's only looking for the cheer. He's yep. looking for the boo, and when the boo's enough, when there's enough boos, like I hate to go back to sex, but
yeah, I bet you do. Well, I introduced you, so you have to now. So it's like, yeah. Well,
I mean, it's like when you culminate and you get to where you are about to be at your arrival. Okay,
hit your finish. Yeah.
Yeah, hit your finish. it's time to switch gears. It's time yes. to have your comeback.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
100%. Well, Matt, I was always told the heel is the one that's there's no heat without having a good heel, but the heel is the one that's listening to the pace of the crowd, the feel of the crowd.
Yes.
He's the one that knows like they're not booing me enough yet for you to get the reaction for your comeback. So wait a minute. Just I've talked to a lot of old school guys, and that's like when they put a guy in a chokehold, he goes, nowadays, you know, Harley'd be like, I'd sit in a fucking chokehold for 20 fucking minutes. And I'd go, why? He goes, it would piss everybody off. And that was his mentality. Like, he didn't care what anybody else thought. His job was to make people angry. And if it took him sitting in a chin lock working a guy for 20 minutes, that's what he would do.
And again, like to what you both are saying, even in tag matches, you want the baby faces to, you want to build to that hot tag. So when that tag happens, the place, as Pat Patterson used to say, will go banana.
But 100%. And can I say something real quick for people on tag teams? And if we got wrestlers listening to tag team wrestling, if you are the one taking the heat in a match, I'm breaking kayfabe here, I know, but if you're the one taking the heat in the match, do not blow a mini comeback before you tag out to get a comeback. And what I mean by that is, if you have enough energy while you're taking the heat to hit this beautiful flip sun roll drop kick into this fucking beautiful, I don't know, scissors, clothes, whatever, your heel has not worked you over enough. Do you understand right. what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And what wrestlers don't understand is when they put all these beautiful moves before the hot tag happens, you kill the hot tag for the next guy because there's no jeopardy for him to be tagging in with for. Does that make any sense?
No, it makes a lot of sense.
It makes a lot of sense. And what makes more sense is this. I can't stand, for some reason, a lot of the bullshit that goes on nowadays.
But that's the thing, Brian, not to cut you off, but I want to hear your answer, Trevor, but you said the magic word, reasons. There is no reasons. It's who, what, why, when, where, not just how.
100%. I think here's the one of the issues that we have for our younger generation is they're in a cycle. They have to top the next guy. Like, that's how they were trained. Like, they've got to top the next guy to get over. So whether you're in the first match, the second match, or the third match, they're trying to top the next match, not thinking about how they're going to emotionally connect to the people with this match. And it's hard for them to compete in that area because you got guys that do some amazing things in the ring. And our fans, you guys know our fans have changed in their taste of pro wrestling to a certain extent. They want a little bit more higher impact match. Well, to have that, you have to lose a certain amount of believability. And, you know, you got these young guys that are just, they're in a cycle. They don't have an opportunity to tell those stories until they get into the ring with a guy like an Edge or Jericho or even a Kenny Omega. Like, you know, those guys, he can tell stories too. Like, once they get in the ring with those guys, they have an opportunity to tell the stories. But unless they have some meat and potatoes, something they can chew into character-wise or storyline-wise, they're just trying to go out there and top the next match. That's what they're doing to try to survive.
Yeah, I love listening to Bully Ray talk about his five-star matches. Who the cares about five stars? You know what the five stars is? The reaction from the audience. When that place is going crazy, there's your five stars.
But that also comes down to promoters too, guys. Like, we bust, you know, wrestlers' balls about this, but we have to have promoters that want to tell those long-term stories, that don't want to fast forward things to try to get to that next pop. There's a couple of larger companies that are just working towards that pop, and they're not willing to invest the time into the stories. We all know at one time wrestling, all wrestlers used to be over, all of them from top to bottom. The whole card was fucking over. The reason? Because all those guys were a part of some sort of story. The promoters nowadays don't know how to tell those stories, which in turn, they don't know how to book them. So I'm not trying to shit on nobody, but the wrestlers can't take all the heat when it comes to that kind of stuff.
So, Trevor, Billy and I have a very good relationship. He inducted my dad into the Hall of Fame. We chat time to time here and there. It's much more less frequent than it used to be, obviously, because he's such a busy guy. The music world's going on. And my biggest question to him was, why not let's find a network? Let's find a network. And my meaning of finding a network was not the one you're on now. My meaning of a network was, let's get on the fucking Animal Planet. I don't give a fuck. Let's do something and get off of YouTube. Let's be bigger. He believed and put his foot in the ground and told me, and this was, damn, I lose track of time. This been a long time ago. And you know it, so you could probably give a date process of when I was there, when you were there. And he said, they're streaming. Streaming is going to be the way it is. I'm waiting. And that's going to be what it's going to be. And yada, yada, yada. And we all looked at him like he was a fucking lunatic.
Just like everybody else that said that he couldn't do wrestling. You know what I mean? Like, that guy, he has literally made his own path. And the whole time he's been in the wrestling business, they've told him he couldn't do it. And by God, he's like, you know what? I'm going to fucking do it. And the same thing with the TV thing. Like, he sees, I'm not sitting there going to like shine him up and like, he's a boss just like anybody else. But for some reason, he has got his finger on a pulse that a lot of us don't see. And at first, in the beginning, like, I was a little unnerved about it and some of his decisions. But I looked at the end, I looked at the end result and what results they got, and they work. So at some point, you got to sit back and go, let him do his thing. The CW gig, like,
before you go get ahead, involved. Sorry. Yeah, you're good. You're good. Before we get all in that, let's explain that. So you're now on the OVW, basically. They're also on the CW network as well, correct?
Yes. Yeah, I think they're, no, I don't know what, I don't know what they're, I don't, I think they're, I don't know what they're, honestly, I don't know what their connection is. I haven't paid enough attention. I'm kind of focused more on NWA. And I know that NXT is on CW on the programming. And I know we're on the app. But I don't know actually what the details are between OVW and CW.
Actually, I know where I got twisted. You're right. You're exactly right. NXT is, OVW is on the one that Netflix,
yes, they've got their documentary going. Yes.
Mm. Okay.
That's where everybody's going. Like, and you guys have, I mean, that was, you can't tell me when you heard the news that WWE was going to Netflix, we all didn't sit back in the chair and went like, oh shit. That's wow. Like, no one, you know what I mean? Like, there's obviously moves to be made in that direction, And like you were talking about with Billy, he had the foresight to see like that's the direction we're going, that's where we're going to go. And it seems as if he just waited out his time before somebody came knocking on his door. And that's, you guys know how it is in the world of television. It's all that there's a certain amount of a power play. And when you're the one going, hey, can we do this? Can we do this? Can we do this? You tend to lose a certain amount of power. Billy continued with his product and kept a certain standard of his product to the point where it got the eyes of CW. We just didn't know they also were getting the eyes of NXT as well.
Trevor, I'm being dead serious. He never wavered. He looked looking for some jack-off deal from the sea, like the Animal Planet, the whatever it was. You know, He was like, no, it's going to streaming, and we're going to do it, and we're going to be just as big as everybody else. Like, he really, truly believed it.
And put his money where his mouth was. Literally, like, all of his, like, that's what a lot of people don't understand either. Like, the production trucks alone, we're talking $70,000, $80,000 per TV. Like, that's not no tax time promoter going, hey, I'm trying to start up some wrestling show. For me, he's held, and I can only speak about me, but he's had me under a deal 3 of the 4 years I've been here. Like, that, it's fed my family. He was bound and determined to do what he wanted to do and believed in himself and believed in the company, and it's working. When all the dirt sheets came out about, you guys know about the infamous spot or heard about the infamous spot at the Selwyn pay-per-view. A lot of people did not understand that move. A lot of us, even myself included, didn't understand the move. Do you know how many views we got on YouTube
for
that one move?
A lot.
Yeah. Did our deal change with CW because of that? Not one fucking thing. It was the same. We were doing the same thing we were planning on doing before that spot, everything. But what that spot did do was brought a lot of attention to people that weren't wrestling fans. They wanted to know what everybody was talking about and got us attention. Now, can you do that with a larger network? Like when you're on WWE, no, you can't do that. But we're not in that space right now, so we have a little leeway to run on an edge a little bit. And if anybody's going to run on an edge, it's Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkin.
Yeah, you guys know him obviously. I've never had the pleasure of getting to meet him, but you guys both work for him. But he sounds like a guy that you can actually go to and, like you said, present ideas, and he listens.
100%. And there's times that he'll look at me when I with you know, because he'll tell me what he wants, and I will make that work in the wrestling world. And then there's times that he'll look at me and go, that's not what I want. Just do it the way I ask you to do it. And I'm no different than any other employee. I keep my boss happy, but he is probably the most approachable boss I've ever had when it comes to pro wrestling. The guy who's willing to listen to my idea and not afraid to be wrong. Like, he's got ideas too, and I go, it'll work better this way. Because I didn't look at it like that. Okay, good, we'll do it that. You know what I mean? Like, and that makes me feel like I'm a part of something. Like, I'm really creating something. I understand I'm here to do what I'm told. I'm no different than any other employee. But when I feel like I'm a part of the creative process, I'm a part of making the NWA something different, man, I'm in wholeheartedly. I will, you know what I mean? I'm an NWA guy. That's who I am. That's the brand I have on my back, fellas. When my wrestling days are over, when Billy says, you know, you fat ass, I am tired of looking at you on my TV. Yeah. I'm done, boys. I'll step behind the camera and I'll try to make the next generation of NWA wrestlers the best they possibly can be, because I cannot do anything better than what I've done by being 2-time NWA World Heavyweight Champion. I'm not going to be able to. And I really don't think I want to top that. Like, that's, I think that's a pretty, pretty good thing to have.
Nice.
So Trevor, just to let you know that I didn't know this until I had conversation with Billy Corgan, but you know, the last, I don't know, 6 months of my time in TNA, did you know that Billy Corgan was paying me?
No, I did not.
Yeah. TNA wasn't paying me. Billy Corgan was.
Wow. It sounded like that company at that time was a fantastic brand to work with and made you so excited to come to work every day.
Now, this is the Aubergine.
That's what I'm saying. Back then, at that time.
Yeah, they were in trouble, and he came in as one of the
some leadership issues.
Right. Came in and a builder of the brand, and I think they got in financial situations where people like me demanded to get fucking paid, or they were leaving. And we got paid, and yeah. So Billy's a good dude. He's a good dude.
Didn't he bring you over when you started NWA? Like, you were one of the guys that were helping getting NWA started off the ground, right?
Yes, I was handpicked by him, and I was very more into a role that I've never been into, beyond reffing, obviously, backstage. I mean, you know, look, I booked you to be with me in a house.
I'd go on the back porch and smoke with you. Cigarettes. We're live. Cigarettes.
I don't care. We might have smoked weed. Who gives a fuck?
I'm going to be like, I had a great time back then. Like, you know, I really enjoyed the fact of all of us coming to an Airbnb, as long as, you know, we didn't have any weirdos taking the Ubers back to the building. That time for NWA at Atlanta, GPB was special, man. The crowd was hot. The talent was on point. We had some of the best unsigned talent. And I can prove that to you, because as soon as COVID hit, all that talent got signed away. But man, now what a special time that was.
Well, on a side note, and do you remember what was her name that did the booking of the shows? Those anyway, I was graciously giving the list of people that I had to deal with, which were Rick Steiner, Scott Steiner, the Rock and Roll Express, because the girl that was doing it could not get anything done.
That's a tough crowd.
It's a tough crowd. But anyway, so I have one more fan question here, and it's from, I'm not making this up, you can look it up online, it's at Trixie Licks.
I think, okay. I know the question.
Yeah. You already saw it?
I think so. Is it about the overseas issue?
Yeah. On the CW Network. Obviously, all right, I'm not reading it. She doesn't get the shit. She wants to know, why the fuck? How do you feel?
With the NWA switching over to the CW app, her issue is the fact that they do not get the CW app overseas. My answer to that, because I actually saw that question and I wanted to try to give her an answer from the office. And they are currently, you guys know how TV deals work, and especially when it comes to overseas and rights for everything. They are currently in the process of working on that, but nothing is secure. So it's one of those scenarios where you got to do your best to try to catch it elsewhere. Because right now, you know, with us just coming to the app, we're still a little behind on getting it out to the rest of the world.
Well, I mean, fair enough. I mean, it's fair enough. I mean,
yeah, like, we're still green. We just got here. Our first episode aired today, so on the CW app. So it's heading that direction. Please don't. We haven't forgotten you, for sure. And I guarantee you, she's from England, London. She's from Europe, so I understand her concern. And please let her know that we are for sure working on that.
I would definitely learn of that.
So before we close shop for the night, Trevor, just the place that NWA is right now. We, like you mentioned, it with the CW. You're a two-time champion. You're seeing the likes of Matt Cardona. You're seeing the likes of an EC3 with these titles. Potential. Are they doing, do you see EC3 as the face of this company going forward? You know what I mean? He's the brand. We're better use of terms.
No. Here's 100%. And I'll explain why. First off, EC's intellectual, most pro wrestlers, his desire to be the best in the business is unmatched. He loves, you know, telling stories, knows how the importance of that world title. And, you know, when you have guys like Matt Cardona, who's a former world champion in his own right, fighting for it, it gives it all the prestige it needs. And that's what that world title needs to be. Number two, like, those guys are recognizable names in the world of pro wrestling. Like, when you hear the name EC3, most wrestling fans know who you're talking about. When you hear Matt Cardona, most fans know who they're talking about. So I'm excited for the world title. I'm excited to see where it goes. I am currently, since I have already been two-time NWA World Heavyweight Champion, beat Nick Aldis 1,000-plus days, my goal is to did that come out? I'm sorry, fellas. It's in my brain. Just came out. My focus right now is on the NWA World Tag Team titles. I really, especially with Knox, being a former WWE World Tag Team Champion, I think it really solidified me as a world champion in the tag team division if I could pull it off with Knox as well.
That's amazing.
See how I averted that? I reverted mm-hmm. that back to the tag team? Like, that's like,
I did, Trevor. I'm a very smart guy. I saw it.
Fuck them guys. I'm getting a world tag title. No, no, not at all. No, those. I'm excited to see what happens between those two. Those guys are going to beat the shit out of each other. And to be honest with you, to me, that's pro wrestling. Is two guys that are wanting to go in there and entertain, but also put their bodies on the line. And EC3 and Cardona are going to do that every time they step into the ring.
Absolutely. Yeah. So here's what we want to do. At this point, as if we didn't put you over enough, I want you to put yourself over more and put out your social medias, anything upcoming, anything that you want to put out there. Let it go, buddy.
On Facebook, you know, I got the Trevor Murdoch with the little blue check mark. On Instagram and Twitter, I'm at the Real T Murdoch. We've got a big show coming for NWA in Dothan, Alabama on March 5th. Supposed to be a really good, it's TV taping, be a really big show. I can't quite say what match I'm going to be in yet, but it's going to be deal with steel. Can't give out too many details, but I'm super excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, guys, I'm a basic bitch, fellas. I wrestle for the NWA, come home and take care of my wife and kids, man. You know what I mean? I'm all my crew. Especially since I got a young man who's a senior in high school. This is his last year at home as a kid. You know what I'm saying? Don't get me wrong. Like, he's going to be a mechanic. He wants to go to trade school, become a mechanic. He's been hitting me up about being a wrestler, and I told him that I will not even have that discussion with him unless I get a degree or a certificate or a diploma of higher education. Once we get that, then I will put 100% effort into whatever he wants to when it comes toward the wrestling business. But he needs to have some higher education for the old man before we step into the world of wrestling.
Hey, and I'll tell you this right now. My son is at Milligan University in Tennessee. He's playing baseball. He has talked to me about being a referee, which I don't know how he can do that because he's big as fuck. But
It can be done.
That was the good thing about a referee and Brian. God love you. You know, of your stature, you made guys look big. You know what I'm saying? In the ring, you take a medium-sized guy and look like a giant next to you sometimes.
Yeah, but and then you get guys like Big John McCarthy in the UFC who makes some of those, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, no, he's a thick cat too.
Yeah, so it can be done. It's just that in the world of professional wrestling, where perception is reality, it takes away a little bit when someone is that big.
Yeah, I think it would shy away from a main event, that's for sure.
Does he not want to bump?
Oh, I'm not. No way I'm putting him through that. No way.
Right, like, no. I'll let you get close, kid, but you ain't getting burned by the sun.
Hey, Trevor, it tells you how much I respect what you guys do and don't want to put him through that.
No, bro. This is I joke about my son being a part of the business, and it's tough, man. What I'm hoping the way I'm looking at it with my boy is that I'm hoping that I can give him opportunities that I didn't have to maybe get him farther towards his goals than what I was able to achieve. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
you know,
I do. Yeah.
And not have to go, don't get me wrong, like the heartache and the bullshit that I went through in the 25 years, it made me the man and the wrestler who I am today, and I wouldn't change any of it. But in the same sense, if I would have had a little bit of more, maybe of a helping hand towards a TV product, I may have had some of my better years on TV than what was shown. You guys, right. You know what I'm saying?
No.
I totally get it.
Yeah. The hard times. It's a real story. Hard times.
100%. And that's the name of the pay-per-view. I'm Jimmy, you see, I love how you routed right back in. Yes, hard times, March 5th, NWA, Dothan, Alabama.
Hey, well, basically, fuck all those podcasts you do. This is the best one.
No, I can open up with you guys a little bit. To be honest with you, man, it's just nice to be able to talk to some guys that have a little bit more information past other than my Wikipedia. So it's nice to talk to guys that are a little informative and know what they're talking about.
Well, thank you. That means a lot, man. And it was fun catching up and fun listening to you and Brian's stories. Let's put it that way. I don't know if I would be able to hang out in that Airbnb that you guys would hang out in, but it sure would have been fun to try.
We'd turn your frown upside down, that's for sure.
me and Trevor were like, all right, we don't know these audio guys that I booked, but I did it on purpose because I'm like, these motherfuckers are going to say and do what I say. And me and Trevor are going to run this fucking house. And I trust it.
And then one time, here's what I do remember. One time I got there early at the Airbnb, and I got the good room, and Brian come in and he goes, I know you didn't, motherfucker. And I go, yeah. He goes, I ain't going to be booking you with me no more.
That's like Big Show taking over. We did that tribute to the troops out in Iraq that time, and we all slept on cots in the big room. In the room where the boys were, in the room where the crew was, there was one king bed in each room, and of course Taker was given the bed in the boys' room. Yeah, and then Jason Robinson, who if anybody knows, he's a production guy with WWE, was like all of 5'5", if was in the king size bed, and everybody else was on cots, and Big Show comes walking in the room, he says, "Oh no, this ain't happening now." And guess who got the bed?
Okay, you got the bed. I wouldn't argue with him either.
Hell no. Hey, well, Trevor, I hate to do this because we always seem to always have a part two for everybody we have on here. But anyway, thank you so much, dude. I love you to death, man. I know that we've had some fun. We've had conversations. I know that you're a great dad, which means the most to me. I know you're a great human being. And I also know that you're a great fucking wrestler. I'm so glad that NWA was able to give you the opportunity to resurrect your career and for you to live your dream and watch your kids see it as well. And I don't know what to say, bud.
No, man, I appreciate it, man. That's kind of hard to follow that. I appreciate you guys having me on. It's fun to talk about old times and guys that actually appreciate pro wrestling. Don't get me wrong. I know wrestling evolves, but, man, sometimes I just wish I could believe a headlock. You guys know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, again, I hate to sound like so redundant because these guys have heard it so many times. It's like when the wheel was invented, it was stone, and then it became wood, then it became rubber, vulcanized rubber and all that. But at the end of the day, the wheel is round or else it doesn't move.
Still fucking wheel, man. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys for having me. This has been great.
There's a lot of good stuff coming out of that episode, guys. I'm very thrilled that we're able to have Trevor Murdoch on. Guys, appreciate everybody that's tuning in this week. But Jimmy, man, absolutely phenomenal stuff you're doing over Wrestling Inc. Tuned in last night, saw some of your stuff. I kind of linger back in the background a little bit watching your stuff over there. But on top of that, you got so much other things. I don't know how you do it. You must have a pretty good secretary.
No, I have a great, I don't want to call her a secretary. How about the council? As Cody would
works
call
for
it,
me.
We're, some council.
Works for me.
Good council. Let's put it that way.
Jimmy, at least get your head out of wrestling for a minute. You have a fucking secretary.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Well, I wish I could. I just don't know how she would take being called a secretary. Let's put it that way. But yeah, I've outkicked my coverage in this one, so I've been blessed. Let's put it that way.
But yeah, how begin? You're doing your reference, Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
Well, how can people get a hold of you with that?
You know, on all my social, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, I put them out there from Monday to Friday. Again, little critiques, not to tear down, but to help tighten screws that I believe need to be tightened. And to contrary to popular opinion, I want everybody to succeed in this business, all companies, not just one, because I'm a shill for the WWE and I'm on the take and blah, blah. No, I'm being honest with every opinion I do on here, on Wrestling Inc., both Mondays and Wednesdays, whether it's Raw or Dynamite, my opinions are mine and they're honest and they're genuine. And I do that on my ref and rants, but I try to have a little fun with it too at the same time. And I have a blast here every week with you guys. And, you know, I appreciate you guys very much.
Yeah.
I'll just say this to go ahead and start. Jimmy, I know you. I've been to your house. I know your wife. And yes, you have certainly outpunted your coverage. Yeah.
But
I'll let her know you said that. That's gonna she'll get a pop. That's for sure.
Well, I'm not trying to pop her, I'm just being fucking honest. God damn.
Hey, I'm not denying it.
But I think Brian, it's your turn this week to get heat online. So how can people kind of poke the bear a little bit for you?
I'm changing my stance right now. I'm just gonna be indifferent. Ready? Don't reach me. I don't have anything. Fuck it.
Okay. Well, go use the Google machine then.
There you go.
All right. Gosh. At Baby Habner on both. If you don't know what they both are, 1-8-X. It's called Twitter and Instagram. At Baby Habner. After that, that's it. Why is it?
Well,
RJ?
I don't know. I don't know. I put it out either way. I just, you know, it's a way to have a conversation here. You know, I'm not, it sounds like I'm reading off like a Wikipedia or something and whatever. That's, we've been here a lot, whatever. So you can follow the show's page at Reffing It Up on Instagram and Twitter. Next week, gentlemen, you can start yelling, oh, Shell, yeah. We're going to have Shark Boy on next week. TNA legend, it's gonna be very interesting to kind of pick his brain on a lot of things there in TNA. So, definitely looking forward to that, guys.
Bro, I am so excited about this. I am really so excited. I swear to God, he is so awesome. And nobody knows him behind the mask, and to have him on our show, what the fuck? Let's go.
With that being said, guys, want to give a quick shout out to two members of this team that really does this show very a good amount of justice. AJ McKay does a great music for the show, intros, outros, all that good stuff. And then the one, the only, the great JD Hoop that does the great graphics each and every week that you see. He's all over. They're all over. Their contact information will be in the show notes as well. But without further ado, thank you tuning in this week for Mr. Jimmy Corderas and Mr. Brian Hemner. I am RJ. We will see you here next week on Reffing It Up.
One, two, three.